support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Cambria, California. Come along and join me as we visit with Michael Young. Mike is the CEO of the Foundation at Hearst Castle. But previous to this incarnation in his life, Michael has had an incredible Forrest Gump life journey. Tell us where you grew up.
Tom, first of all, you gave me a promotion, which I really appreciate.
Oh, really?
I'm only the executive director of the foundation at Hearst Castle, but I appreciate that promotion.
No problem.
But I grew up in Visalia, California. My mother's side were all farmers and dairymen.
When you were in high school there, what did you think you were going to do?
I wanted to be an anthropologist.
Wow.
An archaeologist. That's what I wanted to do if I couldn't play professional baseball.
So throughout high school, you were on the high school baseball team?
I played every sport there was. I ran track, and really track is what got me where I was, especially when I was younger. My father taught me how to run. My dad was a teammate of Bob Mathias.
Wow.
One of the greatest athletes, you know, in the history of our state, and especially in the Central Valley. So I did track. I did football, baseball, soccer, wrestling. I did it all.
So you were targeting baseball at that time?
Baseball was my favorite sport, mm-hmm. and everybody that knew the game said that was my best sport, mm-hmm. and that's the sport I should focus on.
There was a curveball.
Yes, there was. There was a curveball. Basically, my sophomore year in high school, I was doing very well in football as well, and we did a drill, a tackling drill, which I never was afraid to get hit, but I never was a big fan of tackling. And so me and a buddy of mine, we used to always team up when we did this one tackling drill, and we'd kind of take it easy on each other. And this time, for whatever reason, he decided to go full out, and I went down to tackle him, and he hit my shoulder with his knee, and it tore my rotator cuff. I was one of the top prospects in the state for baseball, and I was only a sophomore, but many of the teams were following me. The Dodgers basically picked up the tab for what my parents' insurance wouldn't cover to have Dr. Job, who was one of the greatest pioneers of orthopedic surgery. He's the one that did the Tommy John surgery, and he had just done the Tommy John surgery and then did my shoulder, and the
Tommy
Dodgers
John
paid for that.
Was...
Tommy John was a pitcher for the Dodgers, but this Tommy John, he's more famous for the surgery that's named after him, because Dr. Job is the one that created this technique. Now, pretty much, I would say 50% of all Major League Baseball players have what's called a Tommy John surgery, and it's absolutely saved many, 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 many careers.
Yeah. So they were looking out for you in high school.
Yes. Yeah, it started actually when I was in Babe Ruth.
So they wanted you.
Yeah. I mean, and many other teams did as well, because I could run, I could hit, I could throw. After my shoulder injury, I could no longer throw. So I had to make a decision on what I was going to do, and I decided not to play baseball my senior year and focus on football. I loved the pageantry of football. I loved all the things that went along with football, and I wanted to get a scholarship.
Where did you want to go?
Well, I grew up being a USC football fan, and USC was recruiting me very heavily, and I took recruiting trips to USC, Notre Dame, Nebraska, Oklahoma, University of Colorado, Washington. I didn't even take a trip to UCLA because I didn't want to waste a trip, and I went there on an unofficial visit and went to go visit a friend of mine that was my teammate in high school, who was a year older than me. He was there playing football on a scholarship, and I just fell in love with the campus. I had no idea that UCLA was so beautiful, and the difference between UCLA and USC at that time was pretty vast. USC was, you know, that was in the middle of South Central LA, and that, in the memory of the Watts riots, were not all that far off.
And not that far away.
And then it was just a tough area compared to UCLA, who sat in between Bel Air and Beverly Hills. Just a much different world in Westwood.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. Plus, they told me I would start as a freshman, where USC told me I wouldn't start until I was a junior.
Mm-hmm.
Which wasn't the truth, but that's okay. That's what got me to UCLA.
Yeah. So you played ball there throughout all 4 years?
I did. I played football, but then because I wasn't playing as much as I wanted to or pretty much at all my first 2 years at UCLA in football. I got very disillusioned and was going to transfer to Notre Dame because I couldn't transfer to USC because you can't transfer within the same conference without sitting out 2 years. Oh. So I was going to transfer to Notre Dame, and Coach Donahue came and visited me and said, look, you know, if I let you play baseball, will you stay? And I said, yeah, if you'll let me play baseball, mm-hmm. I'll stay.
Oh, cool.
So I went out for baseball, and I just expected to make the JV team and just have fun with it, but I ended up starting right away.
Wow.
And that was a whole other chapter in my life.
In position, you?
I was an outfielder, and my arms started to get a little bit stronger and come back just through just natural weightlifting and doing the things I was doing in football. But it was never as strong as mm-hmm. it once was, but it was definitely okay. It was just very average.
Okay, so at some point you graduate and you got picked up by the pros.
Yes, and you have some interesting stories in between there. You know, you kind of mentioned Forrest Gump and just some of the crazy things that happened to me before that. You know, I'll never forget, as a kid, I was a huge track fan, a huge decathlon fan because of Bob Mathias. Well, one of my first experiences, I was probably, I would say, 10 years old to 11 years old, and I got to be a bag boy, which means you carry around the equipment for these decathletes, and I was carrying equipment for a guy named Bruce Jenner.
Wow.
And it was an incredible experience, and I remember to this day, I remember him having conversations with the other decathletes about how much trouble he was having with his wife. And even as a young kid, I picked that up. Ooh, wow. You know, I didn't even think of these guys as having families, but I remember so specifically talking about the problems that he was having with his wife, and I still have the autograph that he signed for me after that event, which he didn't win. He actually took second place in that event. That was kind of my first brush with professional or big-time athletes. And then, talking about recruiting trips, I grew up in Visalia, and I was 17 years old and never been on a flight, never been on a plane,
wow.
and never been out of the state of California. And my first recruiting trip was my third week of my football season. Nebraska wanted me to come out and visit during their season, and so they sent a Learjet
wow.
to Visalia Airport
wow.
to pick me up. And so my first plane ride was in a Learjet.
You got spoiled right out of the chute.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that was a whole other crazy story. The recruiting process is something that they don't do now because it was just over the top back then with a lot of crazy stories, which probably aren't good for your show. So, yeah, that was a lot went in between. And, you know, my dream was to play in the Rose Bowl and had a chance to do that twice and had the very best game of my college career in the Rose Bowl. That was my dream, was to be a decathlete, just like Bob Mathias.
Right.
When I learned that I couldn't do the pole vault, I was scared to death of doing the pole vault. I said, well, I'm going to have to adjust my dreams.
And was that because of your shoulder?
No, it was just I couldn't
get
over the fear of, you know, basically bending backwards and having a pole throw you over the top of a bar way up high. And I couldn't get over that. So I thought, you know, I got to readjust. What else did Bob Mathias do? Well, Bob Mathias scored a touchdown in the Rose Bowl when he played football at Stanford. So that was my next goal, is to catch a touchdown pass and play in the Rose Bowl. And that happened in 1984 against Illinois, and had a 52-yard touchdown and had the best game of my college career at over 100 yards. And
wow.
And a memory that I'll never, ever forget.
So freshness in your mind to this day.
Oh, without question. That was one of the top three memories of my life.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Wishes do come true.
And it was actually kind of scary because that was my ultimate dream. And here I am, a junior in college. And I'll never forget waking up that next morning going, whoa.
Yeah, really?
Now what?
Yeah, where do we go from here?
Now what?
Raise the bar.
Yeah.
And maybe you could do the pole vault.
Sorry for my trip down memory lane, but those
that's awesome.
Those are part of your, as you say, my Forrest Gump story.
Mm-hmm. I remember one time, you just as an aside, I was told, I was going to Nashville, where I'm going tomorrow, actually. You started telling me about playing music in Nashville. How did that happen?
So, I sing. I've sang all my life, and mostly in the shower. And for friends, I used to do an unbelievable Michael Jackson and Donny Osmond imitation when I was 8, 9 years old, when it was the Jackson 5,
right.
and the Osmonds were big. But how I ended up doing the recording in Nashville with John Anderson, who was one of the great, great country music singers of all time. He's just the most, he's just real. He's a real country music singer. Mm-hmm. I was asked to do a demo tape for Sam Lovello. Sam Lovello was the producer of Hee Haw. And Sam heard me sing at a UCLA baseball event. I just got up and, you know, the guys said, hey, you know, get up.
Random.
And sing. Yeah. And so Sam's like, you can sing. And so he asked me to do a demo tape. I sent it to him and then went and actually visited Nashville and went backstage at the Grand Ole Opry, met Loretta Lynn, went on her bus. And that was a great story. Her husband said, Loretta, this is Michael Young. He's a professional football player. I was playing with the Rams as my rookie year. And Loretta goes, oh my gosh, she said, I've seen professional football. She said, we went to a game in Hawaii, and I saw the Hawaii team play. She goes, do you play for the Hawaii team? And I said, no. Her husband, his name was Dew, he goes, oh, hell, Loretta. He goes, that wasn't a team, that was the Pro Bowl. And so she had been to the Pro Bowl thinking that that was, you know,
right.
Yeah. But so long story short, I took that demo tape I had to go back, you know, play the next season. And that year they had what was called the Super Bowl of Talent show. And so they asked players in the NFL to submit tapes of their talent. Sure enough, they asked me to come. And I was selected and then became one of the finalists for the show, the Super Bowl of Talent, which aired right before the Super Bowl. The lead-in into the Super Bowl, and this is in 1988. So the host of the show was John Candy and Ahmad Rashad, and I was the first one to go out, and it was live.
Were you nervous?
I was beyond nervous. I played in front of 100,000 people, but this, and there's only maybe 10,000 people, it was at the Miami Aquarium. I was the first one to go out, and it was live television. And I had rehearsed twice, and that was it. And my rehearsals didn't go so good. And so John Candy is backstage, and he says, Mike goes, hey, he goes, you nervous? And I said, a little bit. You know, I'm trying to act cool. I'm like, yeah, I know, a little bit. And he's like, hey, dude, don't be nervous. He goes, there's only probably, what, maybe 20 million people watching, and it's live. He said, what the hell's to be nervous about?
How funny.
So it went out, and it went really well. Mm-hmm. Then when I was at Hee Haw, I'd met John Anderson, and I had this demo tape and now this performance. And then the NFL put together a recording deal for players called NFL Country. So it was everybody from Troy Aikman to a bunch of guys did it, and they asked if I would do it. I went back to Nashville. I asked John Anderson if he would do a song with me to put on this album, and he was so gracious and agreed to do it. And we went to this big-time studio in Nashville and cut this duet, and it was called Let Somebody Else Drive. And it's the one that says, you know, when you get on the whiskey, let somebody else drive.
Okay, so you're L.A. Rams. What position were you playing there?
I was a wide receiver.
Wide receiver. And you picked up a Super Bowl ring there.
I did not.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I played for the Rams for 4 years. And again, it was a very average career. We ran the football a lot, so I didn't catch a lot of passes. We had Eric Dickerson at that time, and all we did was run the ball. It wasn't until I went to the Broncos.
Okay. Maybe I'm wrong, but I seem to remember seeing two Super Bowl rings on your mitts.
Well, I have actually two Super Bowl rings and one Super Bowl loser ring, which we call an AFC championship ring. It sounds a lot better than a Super Bowl loser ring, right?
Yeah. So that was Denver Broncos.
That was the Denver Broncos.
Okay. And same position there.
I was a wide receiver, mm-hmm. and my first year with the Broncos, which was my fifth year in the league, we went to the Super Bowl. And I had one of my best games ever leading into the Super Bowl against the Cleveland Browns that got us to the Super Bowl. But we ran into the San Francisco 49ers, which was
Literally,
yeah. By far. They were, without question, they were probably one of the very best teams that have ever played in the history of the NFL.
So was it defensive line that was the deal breaker?
The deal breaker was our defense could not hang with their offense. That was Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, Roger Craig, you name it. It was just impossible to stop them. So that's where I got my Super Bowl loser ring. I always say the Super Bowl, for me, was the greatest experience up until kickoff. And after kickoff, it was a mess. But so yeah, that's where I got that first ring. And then the other two rings I got as an executive with the NFL. So I
you left Denver Broncos.
I played for the Broncos 4 years. Mm-hmm. I was the leading receiver in 1991.
And I bet it still seems like yesterday in some ways.
It does. And your listeners are probably going, wow, I've heard this guy talk about all the things that he's done, which is pretty amazing. And why the heck don't I even know this guy's name? And that's, I guess, the Forrest Gump. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew Forrest Gump was, you know, Forrest Gump was Forrest Gump, and he did all these things. But yeah, so I played with the Broncos 4 years. I had some really great years, and then went to the Eagles for a year. Finished with a whimper with the Kansas City Chiefs. I got injured, cracked my pelvis the third game of the year, and that was pretty much
it. Game over.
Game over. But my dream always, after my second year in the league, my dream always was to be the guys that were in the suits, that were watching practice, drinking our Gatorade, and that was the executives.
So that's where you wanted to go eventually anyway.
That's really where I wanted to go from my second year in the league.
Wow.
But I knew I could make a lot more money playing at that age versus waiting. Mm-hmm. It takes a long time to move up to a high executive level position in professional sports, and so I was just going to play out as long as I could to kind of build a nest egg.
But they knew who you were.
They did. Mm-hmm. And I actually was one of the first players in the modern era to negotiate my own contract.
Wow.
And I did that to show them that I was more than just a stupid jock. And it worked.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to have to do part two of Michael Young.
Oh, my goodness.
Because there's so many layers to your journey.
Oh, my gosh.
Another highlight that you would like to share?
Well, it would be the Dodgers experience, being the chief revenue officer of the Dodgers, which was a whole unbelievable experience. But I think the highlight was me working with Kevin Costner to work on his speech for the retirement celebration of Vin Scully.
Awesome.
Truly one of the most awesome experiences because of Kevin, but even more so Vin Scully, who became just a great friend.
Wow. Double honor. Two legends, man. Yeah. That's so cool. So, at some point, Michael Young winds up in Cambria, California. Yeah. How did that happen?
Oh, my goodness. That's such a long story.
Cliff notes.
My cliff notes is after my third year as being an executive with the Denver Broncos, which I did immediately after I retired from my 10th year in the NFL, I was asked to be an executive with the Denver Broncos. And after doing everything that I'd ever wanted to do, from redesigning the Broncos football uniforms to rebranding the Broncos, working with Phil Knight at Nike, I really wanted to be closer to my mom and dad. My dad had a stroke. We had two young children, and I wanted them to grow up around their grandparents. And so I told my owner I was going to retire, and I'd saved all the little nickels that I'd made, and my wife and I had lived very frugally. And he said, Michael, I don't want you to retire. I don't care where you live. You can live wherever you want as long as you just keep bringing in money and manage all of our corporate partners. I said, well, I'm moving to Cambria. And he said, let's make it work. So I moved to Cambria so I could be close to my family in Visalia. I love Visalia, but Cambria's a little...
Cambria trumps Visalia.
By a little bit.
Yeah.
I have to be careful. So that's how I ended up here. Mm-hmm. And ended up having some of my best years productive-wise in regards to our corporate sales program and our marketing. And I was, you know, I guess, one of the first to telecommute. And the internet was just coming in. It was amazing how that...
So change. You pulled it off.
I pulled it off.
Yeah.
Until finally, after then starting an arena football team with John Elway and Stan Kroenke, who's the owner of the Rams, and after that, the Dodgers started calling. They needed a chief revenue officer and interviewed a number of people and wanted to see if I was interested. And I thought that's the last thing I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, you know what, this will be a neat chapter. And I thought it was going to be a short chapter, and it ended up being 9 seasons. And
wow.
It was the most memorable thing I'd ever done, and I would put it up against playing in the NFL. It was the most memorable, difficult, rewarding, frustrating thing I'd ever done in my life.
But fond memories.
Unbelievable memories.
Yeah. At some point, you pulled the plug on football, baseball, professional world?
Yeah, it was an amazing life. And I always said if I got to a certain point that I would pull the plug. And I'd gotten there prior, but it was just so hard to walk away. And quite candidly, it was intoxicating.
So there's that drug.
That drug.
Yeah, the hard to walk away from that.
It
alone.
Was a drug. And the drug really was, and I'm just being very candid here, I never really had it as a player. You would think you would get it as a player. But with the Dodgers, it was having the keys to the city of Los Angeles because of all the people that you meet that come through that building and all the ability to share assets. The ability to have the keys to the city of Los Angeles and just the access to people of influence, all the celebrities, all of that. That became intoxicating. I didn't realize how difficult that was going to be to give up. but it was time. It was an unsustainable lifestyle.
Yeah. It's similar to my fighter pilot friends.
Yes.
And they will never do anything close to what they did. Mm-hmm. And that's a hard one to wean yourself from.
Yeah, it was weird because you would have thought it would have been plain, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Plain is the ultimate.
Yeah.
Not being an executive, not doing.
Yeah.
But for me, for whatever reason, that was the most difficult thing to come off of.
Okay. In the Forrest Gumpian journey of Michael Young, I met you out of context.
Yes.
I did not know anything about your Super Bowl history. Or
of course you wouldn't, as I told you. Right. Most of your listeners are like, who the hell is this guy?
So I get introduced to you purely and simply running the foundation at Hearst Castle.
Yes.
So I just assumed you probably finished your anthropology degree.
No, my art degree, right?
Well, art, okay. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm going to be at the Hearst Castle. It should be art.
So how did
architecture.
How did that happen?
Another long story.
Cliff Notes.
Yeah, when I first moved to Cambria in 1998, there was a lot of press about what I'd done with the Broncos, with the rebranding and getting us set up for the new stadium and all that. And so Jack O'Connell, who was a big sports fan.
He was a senator?
He was a senator.
Yeah.
Living in San Luis Obispo. Somehow he had heard that I moved to Cambria. He called me and said, Michael, I heard you just moved to Cambria. He said, we are putting together a task force. This is in 1998, 99. We're putting together a task force to rebrand and to develop a plan to monetize state parks. We would like you to be part of that task force. And I said, that sounds great. I've never even been to Hearst Castle, but I know it's important to my community here in Cambria, and I plan on being here a long time, and sure, I'll help in any way I can. So that's how I was introduced to Hearst Castle, got really into it, and it, like so many people, you just become enamored, just enthralled and intrigued and just blown away by the beauty and the collection that resides at Hearst Castle.
In your time being involved, you were involved in rebranding and reinventing the nonprofit foundation, correct? It had a different name.
So that was in 1998, 99. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of life happened in between with the Dodgers and the Broncos, etc. But I was on the board of the Friends of Hearst Castle.
Okay.
And that was a group that started almost 35 years ago. It was the Friends of Hearst Castle. I was on the board, was very involved, and my wife and I continued to donate every year. And every year they would call, and I'd ask them for a summary. The last year, right before I was going to retire, I called and said, how are things going? And they said, I don't want to mention her name, but she said, Michael, it doesn't look like it's going to last very much longer. It looks like we're going to have to fold this up. And I said, look, I'm going to be retiring here soon. I'll help you guys find an executive director, and I'll help in any way I can. When she shared with me how much money they had to give to an executive director, I told her, this is going to be really difficult to find somebody of quality. Long story short, I am now the executive director. And so they get what they pay for, right?
But you also rebranded, right? It's now the foundation at Hearst Castle.
So what I love to do most, and that is to build and rebrand, they allowed me so graciously, not only the Hearst family, but the state of California and the board was so brave in doing this. They allowed me to rebrand the organization and also expand the mission. So I wanted to include youth programs for underserved kids, to have the castle and people like Julia Morgan inspire young men and women.
So you came up with the STEM and STEAM programs for kids, and you guys do the funding for the school buses for the field trips, correct?
We pay for everything for the field trip. So basically what we do is we bring kids, and most of them are from small farming communities.
Mm-hmm. San Joaquin Valley.
In the San Joaquin Valley, Salinas Valley, you know, Napomo, all over, you know.
So this
California.
Is double mind-blowing for these kids because they have never even heard of or seen or done anything like a European castle.
Well,
on the
and
California
learn
coast.
About STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, art, and math. And learn about STEAM in a real life setting, and there's no better place than Hearst Castle. And we get them to look at STEAM and look at what types of careers follow each one of those disciplines and what are they good at. So that's how we use it. But to your point, I'll give you a great story. So other than just blowing them away when they get up to the castle and they look out over those views and look at the art and look at the magnificent buildings, we then take them down to the water, to the Hearst State Beach, which is one of the most beautiful spots on the Central Coast.
And some of these kids have never been to the Pacific Ocean.
Well, you hit it. So out of the 50 kids, one of the last groups we had was from King City. They're, an hour and a half away?
Mm-hmm.
50 kids from King City. Out of 50, and these are 12 and 13-year-olds, only 15 of them had ever been to the ocean. And that's where you go, this is worth it.
So these are life-changing moments for these kids that they will forever remember.
Without question. And really the whole premise of it is to expand their view of the world and to expand their dreams for themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was no greater dreamer than William Randolph Hearst. Although he was handed a pretty good deck of cards to fulfill his dreams, but, you know, his dad was picking for gold in mm-hmm. the hills yeah. with no money. And so you never know who can make a dream come true.
Yeah. Okay, back to Michael Young's stewardship, navigating the foundation at Hearst Castle. You've had an incredible challenge to keep things going virtually, and now you get another curveball with the road up to the castle being closed.
Yeah. Speaking of COVID, you know, trying to be an optimist, so many horrible things happened during COVID, but so many good things happened just because of human resiliency mm-hmm. and innovation. So one of the things we were able to do, you know, we were kind of geographically bound by a 3-hour bus ride as far as we could bring the kids. But because of COVID and because of things like Zoom, we now can bring Hearst Castle to schools all over the world.
So this is going to continue.
And this is going to continue. Yeah. But we are really hoping to someday, and to your point, the castle being closed, we will be bringing kids back again for in-person visits. But in the meantime, and I don't think we'll ever stop this virtual program, and the state parks has this beautiful ports program that we tied into. Point is, yes, it's been unbelievably challenging because we raised a lot of money with these incredibly unique once-in-a-lifetime experiences, whether it be swimming in the Neptune pool, swimming in the Roman pool, having dinner in one of Hearst's private guest houses, and then viewing movies in his private theater. I mean, really, truly experiencing as authentically as it could ever be being William Randolph Hearst's guest. With that being closed, that hampered dramatically our fundraising, and not so much because of the money we were generating from the events, but the people that we were meeting at those events, then understanding what we were doing, mm-hmm. then became donors. So cool. That's challenging, and we're just praying and hoping that we can get open soon, but it really doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Totally sideways on plan.
We were preparing to be open now, at least half capacity. So it's been really, really hard. So can I give it a plug? So if you please anybody out there, if you please go to our website, which is the foundation@hearstcastle.com. So foundation@hearstcastle.com.
And I think we went through like 3 outer layers of Michael Young's onion.
Yes.
So that means we have to regroup at some point in the not-too-distant future for part 2 in Michael Young's incredible life journey.
I love it. We can talk about being drafted by the New York Mets and that whole story. And
you got
there's
it.
All sorts of fun stuff.
You got it. Yeah, listen, we could talk just the nuances, insides of NFL.
And the difference between the NFL and baseball, which is a huge difference.
Michael Young, thank you so much for the wonderful morning in paradise.
Tom, it's always good to be with you. And like all of us, we live vicariously through you. So keep on traveling.
I will. Well, like I said, it's Nashville tomorrow night.
All right. Yeah. I should go with you.
Yeah, come along.
Cut another album.
Yep. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Cambria, California, where we've been visiting with Michael Young.
Support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969 instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolff, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives, and Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org. You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. And in fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.